Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your Yarning Circle. It is National Talk Black. Yarning with the Baldy One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. And you can have your say by calling us on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you can text the brother 045-714-0550. And our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. And you can utilise any which way you want to yarn with us. We're going across the nation thanks to NERS and look, a powerful tool for our mob, First Nation people. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land where we broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across the deadly country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Have your say and yarn up strong. Yes, we are living in a different world at the moment. Black Lives Matter and black deaths in custody. Thanks for our march over the weekend. And look, standing up for our right and for First Nation people in this country. And condolences there to brother George Floyd. But it's just opened up the so-called can of worms in regard to where we are across the globe, especially in this country, over 432 deaths in this country through to deaths in custody and with no conviction. So that's the topic. And also COVID-19 is the upon us as well. We are not out of the woods with that, so adhere to the rules that are in place in regard to keeping us safe. So that's what it's all about, having an open mind in regard to where we are, or we could say be very optimistic about that. So with that topic, I'm going to catch up a yarn there with Victor Purton. He's a Chief Optimism Officer at the Centre of Optimism. I'm very optimistic about our conversation on the line. We have Victor. A very good morning, Victor. How are you?
Oh, I think I'm very well, Trevor, and you. I just love your conversation. I think you are doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, got us. Yeah, thank you, thank you. It's about communication, isn't it? And look, you are the Chief Optimism Officer at the Centre of Optimism. Very optimistic about our future. That I am. Shed some light on the virtue, on the light of, at the end of the tunnel, please, Victor.
Yeah, sure. So the Centre for Optimism is a year old, and we were looking at all of the conversations around a new normal or back to normal, and our championship, that's not what people want, you know. And then whether it's, you know, the COVID-19 shutdowns and all of us being locked in our houses or our communities not being able to travel, and then, as you said, you know, with Black Lives Matter and, you know, this urgency around the demonstrations, you know, what is it that people want from a better normal? So without any preconceptions, we've gone out to the world and we've had 1,000 people from 22 countries tell us what they've learnt during the lockdown, what they see as a better tomorrow. And what we're trying to do is both the government and employers and individual people empower them to build that better tomorrow. Because optimism, as you know, and you exemplify it, optimism is a belief that things will work out in the end.
You know, sure, but what you're saying is, Victor, is before COVID-19, when we talk about normality before COVID-19, some people thought that there was no normality, yeah?
Well, that's true. And you know, there are always people, you know, looking for a better tomorrow, working for a better tomorrow. And we've got two sets of forces now. You know, one is the Black Lives Matter movement, which, you know, comes out of this, you know, appalling, you know, death in the United States,
yes,
and appalling violence. And at the same time, we've got this COVID force. So our question to people is, do you want to just go back to where we were? No, it wasn't good enough.
Sure.
What have we learned as individuals to make it better, and how can we harness it? So we say, in our work, we say, surround yourself with optimists. You know, people who believe they can make a difference. And as I said, you know, without wanting to flatter you, you exemplify that movement for what is a better tomorrow. In fact, I'll ask you, Trevor, what makes you optimistic?
The fact that I woke up this morning. you know, loving life and being in your own skin. And life is choices and decisions you make. It all reverts back to you and the choice that you make in life.
You are spot on. That is absolutely it. And so what we do, so we go around, we've done it globally, we ask presidents and prime ministers, but we've asked, you know, we ask people digging ditches, you know, we ask people having a smoke in a laneway. What makes you optimistic? So my question to all of your listeners is what makes you optimistic? And, you know, people can think for a minute now, and you know, whether they call in on Talkback or the like. It's just wonderful to hear people's answers. And the second thing is, most people have never asked their husband, their wife, their mother, their father, their children, what makes you optimistic? And there's a wonderful author called Megumi Miki who wrote a book called Quietly Powerful. And when I asked her what makes you optimistic, she just looked me in the eye and she said, "My God, just in asking me that question, you lifted me."
Beautiful.
So that's
exactly.
Our basic research. But then, you know, there's no point being optimistic unless you do something about it. So we're about what we call applied optimism. And one of the things I do when I'm doing workshops or big speeches is I always get people to stand up and shout out, "The leader looks like the person in my mirror." You know, it's everyone has a
role. You're the captain of your own ship, is what you're saying.
Whether they're a 5-year-old kid. And then I also get people to look the person next to them in the eye and say, "The leader looks like the person in your mirror." So do we want to test that out on air?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so everyone listening, Trevor and I will not shout because we're both using microphones. So I want you to say into the radio, "The leader looks like the person in my mirror." And then if there's someone else in the room listening to the radio or you're in the car, stop the car and look into the eyes of the person next to you and say, "The leader looks like the person in your mirror." And it is such a powerful thought. You know, a lot of Australians don't think of themselves as leaders, Trevor.
Sure, yes.
But every one of us, whether it's leading our own lives or leading our families or leading in the workplace, each of us is a leader, and only we can build that better tomorrow. So for a lot of people who answered in the survey, it was just stuff like life balance, you know, not getting stuck in a traffic jam driving to work, cooking lunch together. You know, my kids were, you know, out of school for, I think, nearly 2 months. So, you know, how often have I cooked lunch for my kids, middle of the week, school term? But just sitting together, you know, we've built a stronger community. We've looked out for our neighbours. We've looked out for our older folk. I think, you know, when people say, "Oh, gosh, you know, hasn't the Australian government or the state government or the territory government done a great job?" I think to myself, Trevor, my God, haven't the people done a great job?
Sure, exactly.
In showing how much they care for each other.
Exactly.
What have you taken away, Trevor? So for you, what's your better normal coming out of the COVID lockdown?
Well, I felt as though COVID-19, like I said, was an angel in disguise in regarding family get-together. And we walked a mile in each other's shoes in regard to being at home and conversing. I've got a clean house. I've got a clean relationship. I've got a clean life in that sense, you know. And it was a good investment, I thought, the time that I used in COVID-19.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. My house is not so tidy. I haven't imitated you on that. You're obviously a tidier person. I find sort of...
Well, there was nothing else to do. Not how many times you went to the fridge, and there was a caption on the on Facebook, and you opened up the fridge and the caption was, "You're not hungry, you're just bored." I mean, so I got into fitness as well because I was too much on the couch, not enough ouch, got into fitness as well.
Oh, Trevor, I'm going to take that away because I'm carrying a bit too much weight, and I think that notion of opening the fridge and saying, "Do you really need to eat?"
Well, that's right. That's right. So,
you are going to be part of my better normal, Trevor.
Well, there you go. And as you mentioned, about optimism, and what we're saying is what I always said: we got no control be in control of what you can be in control of, and do not worry about something that may happen because 9 out of 10 it won't happen. So my way of thinking has always been that way inclined, so I've always kept a smile on my dial, and I'm only in control of what I can be in control of.
And that smile on the dial, we actually have a program, and we're going to be turning it into an education program called the Habits of the Optimist. And that number one habit is that smile, Trevor. So easy to smile, but so easy to forget to smile. And I make a habit, you know, wherever I'm going, you know, in the street, in the shopping centre, of looking at the person, the stranger coming towards me, and saying g'day, or, you know, good morning, and a smile. And eight times out of ten, the person smiles back. And we both feel better.
Exactly. Well, and I'm a name tag man. If you've got a name tag and I'm using your name, most important word in English language is the person's name.
Oh, and particularly, you know, there's this, the whole notion of hearing your own name, it's so sweet.
Yes.
But also that's one of the things in terms of our optimism. You know, people share their optimism with us. You know, we publish it. And, you know, people love to see their wisdom reproduced and helping other people. So we've nearly got 10,000 expressions of optimism. And we're actually going to go on the road now. We were originally going to go to the United States this month, and we can't. So we're going to be doing a pop-up Centre for Optimism in Bendigo. We've been asked to do a couple in northwestern New South Wales. So if any of the people listening to your program think that they want to do a pop-up Centre for Optimism, or they want to do something on a video conference, I'm really happy to do that for them. All they've got to do is Google Centre for Optimism or Better Normal and Optimism, and we pop up at the top of Google. So,
And what's your background, Victor?
Trevor.
What's your background? How did you start the Centre for Optimism, and how did it all start in regard to your
really
concept
good
idea?
Question, Trevor. I was Trade Commissioner in North and South America, and everywhere I went, there was this romance about Australians. So the chairman of Caterpillar, for instance, said to me, "You Aussies remind me of the Americans of 100 years ago. Nothing is impossible."
Beautiful, nice compliment.
Secretary General of the Rio Olympics said to me, "I want an Olympic Games as good as Sydney. I want a legacy as good as Melbourne 1956. And it just, everywhere I went, people heard my accent, and there was immediately this friendliness towards Australians. And then after that, I worked on the Australian G20 presidency, you know, which with our summit in Brisbane. But in fact, I did a lot of work with the Cape York community and the like for the meeting in North Queensland of the finance ministers. And again, at that super elite level of presidents, prime ministers, finance ministers, again, there was this incredible positivity towards Australia. And then I came back to Melbourne in 2015, and I was stunned by the negativity in Australian language. Australian language has changed. So if you ask someone, "How are you?" 60% of people will say not bad or not too bad. Yeah, wasted question.
What your mind hears is you're bad, but you're not too bad.
Yeah, and it's a waste. What does not too bad mean? Anyway, so I was a bit confused by this, so I set up the Australian Leadership Project, and we interviewed nearly 3,000 people now on the qualities of Australian leadership. And, you know, not about politicians, but about leadership of community, leadership of schools, leadership of institutions. And
sports.
After we did that study, so if you look at what an Australian leader is, and you exemplify it, Trevor.
Thank you.
Australian leader is egalitarian. You know, we talk to the cleaner the same way we talk to the chairman.
Yes.
And that's unusual in life. You know, most other countries don't do it well. And then self-effacing humour. You know, we laugh at ourselves, but we take our work seriously. And thirdly, may I use the term no bullshit plain speaking? Well, I've done it anyway.
There you go.
But egalitarianism, self-effacing humour, no bullshit plain speaking. Well, there are millions of people like that in Australia, so I was still confused. And then I had the privilege of being on the last panel of the Global Integrity Summit in 2017. And after 3 days of misery, I changed my last speech to the case for optimism. And it just lifted the room. And that was my eureka moment, that the problem is not the problem of leadership. There are millions and millions of good leaders, and most of the people listening to your program would be a good leader. The problem is the fog of pessimism. And so that started me on my crusade to help people find what makes them optimistic. So I don't lecture people on why they should be optimistic, and you live in this fantastic world, you should be optimistic. For each person, it will be different, and it might be faith in God, it might be faith in humanity, it might be my children, it might be my parents, it might be my choice, it might be my mindset. But most people have not been asked the question, what makes you optimistic? And so that has become our basic research tool. I'm a pretty simple bloke, Trevor.
Yes.
So I don't want to have too many questions. So my main question is, what makes you optimistic? And then this better normal came from my chairman. You know, he just said, look, this nonsense about a new normal, what does that mean? Or back to normal, well, things were good, but they weren't that good. Let's take what we've learned and move forward. And just as you have, you know, for Brother George or the like, you know, people can march, but what is it that they're going to do differently that will build a better tomorrow?
Exactly, exactly. Look, you've got people thinking and seeing light at the end of the tunnel, and the conversation we're having, it just makes people stop and think, you know what I mean, and smell the roses, so to speak. So, look, a very important conversation. People can get in touch with you. How, Victor, sorry?
If they just Google the Centre for Optimism, and phone numbers on the website and emails on the website, and if they want a free membership of the Centre for Optimism, again, just flick me an email or an SMS, and I'll do that for them.
And Victor, you're talking organisations and individuals as well?
Absolutely. Well, we've got lots of partners already. We've got the International Association of Contract and Commercial Management. We've got Symphony 7. We've got a whole stack of partners. So, yeah, we'd love to, any organisation that feels they want to foster optimism in their members.
Beautiful.
More than happy to be of service and help. That's our primary goal. We're for purpose, but it's a pretty simple purpose.
Victor, very uplifting conversation. Very uplifting conversation. Thank you very much for sharing. Be in touch, my friend. All the best to you, and you take care and stay safe.
Let's circle back, and whatever I can do to support you and your team, Trevor, because you are doing a great job.
Victor, thank you. You take care, my friend.
Thanks, Trevor.
Bye-bye. Adele Yande, Victor Purton, his name is, Chief Optimism Officer at the Centre of Optimism. So if you want a light at the end of the tunnel and need someone to talk to, that's a good organisation. So do check it out and Google Centre for Optimism. So be optimistic, make the phone call, and look for the light at the end of the tunnel. Have you say Yana Strong, Yana with the Baldy One here, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, taking you right through to 12 noon Queensland time, live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to National News Radio Service and the Daily Program's National Talk Black. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. Now we're going to catch over Yarn now with David Crosby on the line, Community Council for Australia, CEO, and new research COVID-19, a $2,000 job taker in the charity sector on the line. We have David. David, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm good.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So, new search, C19, a $200,000 job taker in the charity sector. Please share the information.
Well, this research looked at 16,000 charities and looked at where they were financially, and then looked at the likely loss of income. And we know we're going to lose a lot of money from fundraising and from other activities, and looked at what the impact would be on charities. And as you know, Trevor, most charities, if they lose money, they don't so much close or go out of business. They cut their programs and their services, and that means people's jobs. So what it meant was that if the modelled 20% loss of revenue happened across these 16,000 charities, it would cost around 200,000 jobs.
Mm. And look, because of the world we're living in, thanks to COVID-19, people have been hurt in so many ways, finance-wise, health-wise, what have you. When people are restricted or losing their jobs, I mean, when we're talking charities, well, it all starts at home. So people are in a position of not giving or not able to give. So it creates a domino effect, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the other thing that happens is, you know, richer people tend to give according to consumer confidence, how confident they are in the economy. Mm-hmm. And we know after the global financial crisis, giving dropped by over 20% for 3 years. So we're expecting that again. And that means that if we're going to talk about employment in Australia and the kinds of programs we need to remember that this isn't just about business, it's also about charities, because they employ 1.3 million Australians, which is bigger than retailing.
Yes.
But they're often not at the table when we're talking about employment programs.
Mm. So they're virtually the forgotten Australians, you could say.
Well, they're forgotten for their economic importance.
Okay.
I mean, I think we all recognise charities are really important in our lives in so many ways, from sport and art and culture and health and employment and housing, and you know, in so many ways charities help us all, and you know, they touch all communities in one way or another. But what politicians and policymakers don't quite realise is that they're also a big part of our economy. You know, that there's not only 3.5 million volunteers, there's 1.3 million workers. Mm. That's about 10% of Australia's workforce. So if we're going to rebuild and recreate jobs, we probably need to invest more in charities.
And that's a powerful word, invest. That's what we're talking. We're not a hand out, a hand up, so to speak.
Yeah, and it benefits everybody if we get charities doing more work and more people employed in community and around the country doing work for their community, then the benefits are both economic and social. When, you know, we feel better, we do better, our communities are stronger, we're more resilient. All those things really matter if you're trying to rebuild an economy.
So you feel as though the government needs to come to the table?
The government's been pretty good at recognising charities during the crisis. I mean, it hasn't done everything that we'd like, but it's been good at giving concessions to charities so they can get JobKeeper and so some of them can get loans and things. Mm. So they've actually recognised that they are important.
Good.
But we think during the rebuilding phase, the government's talking about being very business-focused.
Yes.
Well, business is important, but so are charities, so we don't want to be left behind.
Well, exactly. It should come hand in glove. It should be on the same vehicle, heading the same direction, so to speak.
Yeah, you should get access to the same kinds of programs and supports and concessions. And I think it's especially true in regional Australia, where, you know, people rely on each other a bit more, and charities are more important in some ways than they are in the bigger cities.
Mm. Very much so. So what can a normal Australia do in regard to support in this space?
Well, get involved in their charities. I think the more we have people engage with their charities, you know, going along to their charity events, volunteering if they can, giving if they can, but just being involved, because it becomes about the connections between us, Trevor.
Yes.
I really think, you know, charities are about connecting people and building community. And so the more we can get involved, the more we can support them, the more we can find something that interests us, that we want to support or be a part of, the better. And it's not all about money, and it's not all about volunteering. It's just about participating in some ways.
Exactly. Fantastic. Look, beautiful information. Thank you very much for sharing. All the best, David, and to your team as well. And still stay safe. We're not out of the woods yet, but there is light at the end of the tunnel, yes?
Yes, definitely is. And thanks, Trevor, and thanks for all you do. And I know there's many community radio stations around Australia that are really vital in connecting people. So
yes.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you, David. All the best. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, mate.
That's a beautiful yarn there. David Crosby, his name is, Community Council of Australia, CEO, and new research in COVID-19, a $200,000 job taker in the charity sector. So over Australian charities employ $1.3 million is what he's saying, and rely on over 3.5 million volunteers. So turnover more than $150 billion a year. So a very important space in regard to the economy and keeping this country rolling. So anything you can do, you mob, if you're back on your feet and you're back at work or you've got some coin coming in, give a bit to charity. Do your bit there. Have you say Yarn Up Strong here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Daily number is 1-800-422-416. Yeah, Yarn with Baldion, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm taking you right through to 12 noon Queensland time. Do add to the conversation. 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black. Want to hear what you've got to say to Deadly Mob.
What's the colour of our flag? Red, black and yellow. What's the colour of our flag? Red, black and yellow.
Yeah, love them colours, red, black and yellow. That's Black Rock Band here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you say your mob, 1-800-422-416. Murray, want a yarn, so give me a call, National Talk Black. We're on Cross the Nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. We're housed at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM, Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. Yarning with the Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Going to catch up with sister from WA, with Sylvia. Very good morning, my
Hiya,
sister. Lovely. How are you, Del?
Been very, very tired,
yes.
But it's, you know, it's a big job keeping healthy for all of us.
Yes,
and
it is.
And you've got to keep on, when you get tired, keep on doing what you know works.
Yes, yes. I always say, always do as much as you can, as much as you can, as much as you can, then you rest. Have your rest as well.
Well, I'm doing the patch burnings, which is a big job. You know the patch burnings,
yep.
The tiny little ones.
Looking after Mother Earth, looking after land, country.
Yes, well, I'm trying to mirror the campfires, and we haven't been able to have any all summer, so I'm doing campfires now.
Yes.
But it's a big job to catch up, all about, you know, by ourselves. We need the funding to keep get our campfires so they stop having their horrible, big, far too hot killing burns.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So that, but I phoned today as well. Today there's a rally at about Rio Tinto destroying people's cultural heritage while they're causing climate change and looting our country.
Yeah, yeah, that's very disturbing.
For their privileged few. So the rally, you know how they blew up the caves?
Yes, very disturbing. You there? Sylvia? Sylvia, go ahead. Lost you there. Sylvia, lost Sylvia, WA. Try and get the sister back. Talking about the rally in WA regarding Rio Tinto, the mining, and the designation of our country over there in sacred sites. So, look, that's a conversation going on, and all the mob over there are rallying. Look, love to hear from WA mob. Lost Sylvia, if you can call me back. Otherwise, if any mob there in WA are listening, attending the rally or knowing how it's going, then please give us a bell here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Hey, what you doing, your mob? It's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Mark Aran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Stomping around there, Emily Warramar, and going to catch up again with Sylvia. You there, Sylvia?
Kaya.
So I lost you there, sister.
The phone went funny.
Yeah, so we're talking about the rally in WA?
Yes, it's outside the Rio Tinto office Which is a place called Central Park on Hay Street.
And when's that happening? Happening now?
William and Hay Street, opposite the Wesley Church, from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock.
1 to 3. Okay, that's today. Is that right?
That's today. Yes, right today. Yes. So anybody, even whatever people can do, is always, you know, whatever people can do, whatever.
Look, it gives another meaning to death, black death, and custody, doesn't it? Regarding our sacred sites.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Fancy killing something,
exactly.
Destroying it, something that's been here for thousands and hundreds and thousands of years.
Yes.
And future generations haven't got it any longer.
Exactly, exactly.
Other than what's buried underneath all the rubble. You know, when you look at that, if this was Europe, you'd have everybody. You know, you'd have the anthropologists, the archaeologists, the ministers. Everybody would be there saving it and talking about it and it would be in the media. What a fantastic find for the whole world.
Exactly. You walk in the Vatican, start smashing things. Same thing.
This is better than the Vatican.
Well, hello.
Hello? Yep. Have you lost me again?
No, I'm just saying hello. Yes, it is. More powerful than the Vatican is what you're saying.
No, the Vatican's part of privilege. And what they used to do, they used to burn the women with knowledge, didn't they? They used to burn the women with knowledge and they'd kill babies and people as they spread their gift from Jesus.
Mm. Yep.
I'm really glad the current Pope seems to care about the environment and people and isn't caught up in that hierarchical, imperialistic privilege for myself.
Yep,
society.
So we need support there at the rally against Rio Tinto and their operation in damaging sacred site.
Well, yeah, and our whole country and the world, really. This is
mining.
The tip of the iceberg of what they've been doing to our beautiful, beautiful homeland. Mm. All the food they've wiped out, all the animals they've killed off, all the water they've polluted.
Yep, all the above.
All the above and more, absolutely.
So the march is going ahead.
People's lives that have been lost. And when your people do manage to get a job, it's one of those jobs with them, and people end up smoking and drinking and Coca-Cola and killing themselves because the job's so awful.
All the above. So that rally's happening from between 1 to 3, and that's happening today. Yep.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, thank you for sharing, and please give us some feedback in regarding the rally. And to any mob over there in WA, love to hear how it's all going, and we support you here on First Nation Radio Station, National Talk Black. Thank you, sister.
Thank you, and thank you, everybody, for exposing the racism against Indigenous peoples worldwide.
Beautiful. Thank you. That's Sylvia calling from WA. You mob can have your say. Yarn up strong here on National Talk Black. That deadly number is 1-800-422-416. The time here in sunny North Queensland, 11:39. And I lied to you, not sunny, overcast at the moment, but sunshine in my heart. You mob, give me a call, have your say. Yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. And we're going across the nation thanks to NIRS, National Indigenous Radio Service. I do have a call on the line. We've got George Pilot on the line. George, very good morning. How are you?
Debbie, morning to you.
My brother, Debbie. Is that Debba?
Him too,
my brother. How are you? First of all, let the mob know where you're from, Deb.
I'm from Erub, Darnley Island, Torres Strait.
Wow. Connection there, my brother. Connection.
Yeah, you and me, yeah.
What you want to yarn about, Bala?
Yeah, firstly, during this COVID thing.
Yes.
I heard David, President Blow Education and Regional Torres Strait and Cape Day.
Okay. Yeah.
He's Mr. David, and he was saying something about. Well, he was saying a lot about homeschooling, and he mentioned about those people who are at home. Most of them were were mature age people, and also granddads and grandma.
Okay. Yep.
And homeschooling their children. And some of them most of them are going to boarding school, and they couldn't get to boarding school because of this thing. So they had to homeschool at home.
Mm-hmm.
But parents, I went through the same thing. And one boy in high school, two boys, and one in primary school. So I had both of them all through those weeks.
Yep.
And nearly 8 weeks, sort of, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very hard for me.
Yep.
Because my partner worked. And I was left at home with these two, and it was very stressful.
Yes.
Just to let people know that I talk to a lot of parents from my boys' school, especially primary school, how we found it hard with those young kids getting their attention to study or to do their homework to the to the schooling at home.
It was hard to discipline them as such.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the environment and the structure wasn't there.
Exactly.
They didn't have the teacher. And it was we tried to...
And they couldn't comprehend. They couldn't pick up what you were trying to put down in regard to education, how important it is, and to get back into a routine while being outside school, which is outside the norm. It was hard to focus, is what you're saying.
Yeah, because they used to the structure of going to school, doing the period of work, finishing at school, and we're going to pick them up, you know?
Yes.
But the environment was completely different. And when it came to that, I found it really hard, and I talked to a lot of parents. They found it hard too to keep them interested in their work and trying to keep up with them, and them keeping up with us.
Sure.
So we had a lot of depressed people. A lot of people.
Yes.
You know, my partner come home now finished from where she worked, and I'd be all
frazzled,
depressed and down, and you know, and that
Exactly, and because of what you went through. You had a very hard day.
Yeah.
And trying to keep things abreast, but it was a struggle, is what you're saying. And it affected you mentally, emotionally, yep?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And my argument in the end is that we don't have 4 years university degrees for that sort of stuff.
Yes.
You know? Teachers got that, and they've they try to help out, but not, I don't think, well, it was the first thing for all of us, eh, this pandemic, but we all learned from it. And in the end, when we were getting to the end, we thought it wasn't really. We had to do to the.
You had no support
to do the work with them.
You had no support.
No support, no.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
only when we went to pick up the work at the end of the week and pick up the new work, and we'd start all over again. The questions that we had to ask. The young fellow teacher, she rung up every second, third day to find out how he was going. And tell you the truth, I was lying to her. I was saying, yeah, he's going well. You know, we're doing well. He's English, he's not good, but he's doing math and that sort of stuff. But in the end, we did come to get over it. All the math and the English and all that, all the spellings and words.
I suppose, Deborah, that it highlighted the hat we wear as parents. We are not only teachers, we're psychologists, we're police officers, yeah, we're the judge. Yeah, all the hats that we wear into raising a child, it is not an easy task.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, it goes back to, to what that fellow been, it goes back further, deeper than what's happened in America. Now, this has been going for generations. We've got the same thing. And one commentator on TV said, in Australia, it's not the same as America.
Yeah.
Bullshit. It's the same as America. We've grew up in the same...
If not worse. Exactly.
That's right. And we grew up... And we know what redneck towns there is, Rockhampton and all them places, and like Townsville.
Yep.
We know them places. We've been through that. We've been through the racism.
Well, the title then comes to the conversation, white privilege. And people, especially non-Indigenous, will disagree with that. What do you mean by white privilege? It is what it is what you're saying.
Yes, and he goes really deep about what you said before about we've got to wear all these hats.
Yes.
Now, we wear another hat. That we think about our children going to school every day, and our husbands and wives and nieces and nephews and sons and daughters going to work. How they treat it. We walk into a shop, any shop.
Bala, we got that black skin. We subby that look. We subby that tone, that expression. We know.
Yeah.
It's there.
When you're a white fella and you talk about racism, don't believe nothing they say because they don't live it.
Exactly. My brother, look, very powerful conversation. Thank you very much for sharing. Please do keep in touch. And will you answer my Bala, okay?
I want to leave it there.
Okay, brother. A very important conversation. Deborah, thank you very much for sharing. If you want to add to his conversation in regard to, well, parenthood and the struggle in regard to COVID-19 and maintaining normality and the structure of it and the support in regarding schooling, but also talking about, look, white privilege is a topic that came up as well. I'll put that on the table, so do add to that conversation as well. Here on your daily program, National Talk Black, live with the Murray one, Murray from the Curry, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. I'm your host for National Talk Black, live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. Us, BBM, Bumabrip Media, 99.7 FM. And we've got across the nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. All right, now, know the drowning risk of swimming in cold water. Royal Life Saving calls for Australians to stay safe this winter. So be careful of water. We're going to catch up a yard now with the CEO of RLSS Australia. That's Royal Life Saving Society Australia, Justin Scar. Got him on the line. Justin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. Really good, thanks.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based, Justin?
I'm based in Sydney.
All right.
On the northern beaches of Sydney.
Cold country down there, as the title says, know the drowning risk of swimming in cold water. So we'll need to look, we're a big island. We live around water. So we need to be cautious of water. It is a, it could be a friend, but could be a foe as well, yes?
Yeah, look, water's great fun. We all love it as Australians, yes. Whether it's boating, fishing, camping, by a river, lake, creek, going to the beach. It's a significant part of our life and has been for generations, tens of thousands of years, in fact. But at this time of year, the water is a little bit cooler. And with lots of people have been in isolation and are just getting out and about again as restrictions open up, we just thought we'd better advise people that the local waterhole, the local river, the place they visit in summer may not necessarily be as welcoming during the winter cooler months.
Sure. So you're talking about controlling your excitement, getting in the water, fantastic. Be alert. Be aware of your surroundings. Of course, what comes to mind as well regarding activities, family activities, barbecues, alcohol is another thing that comes to my mind. All the above, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Alcohol is unfortunately a significant part of people relaxing around the water, but it can have pretty tragic consequences. And certainly during winter and being exposed to colder water, alcohol can certainly increase the likelihood of hypothermia. And so people have just got to be a little bit sensible around the water when they're drinking.
Yes. So it's about, look before you leap, look before you dive, do what you need to do regarding keeping the family safe, keeping yourself safe, and don't be lackadaisy in regard to our connection with water, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Alcohol certainly encourages people to do silly things, take unnecessary risks, and sometimes actually not watch their children very, very closely. The water's great, and, you know, it's a fantastic part of most people's lives. So we want people to be wet and have fun. We just like them to be a little bit safety conscious through the cooler months.
Yeah, it's best to be safe than sorry. And look, condolences to family and friends who lost loved ones along the way because of water and being around water and being not being cautious, so to speak. And that's the message we're trying to put across the table. Is that right, Justin?
Yeah, absolutely. It seems a bit funny in Australia to talk about cold water because generally we
Australia,
don't have cold water
hot,
relative
damn
to
hot.
Europe. So. but there are some places that people need to be particularly cautious about. You know, there's some very large pits in old mining places where people can tend to swim. The water in those pits can be extremely cold and cause sudden cramping and cold water shock in some cases.
Justin, would you know what temperature we're talking about in regarding hypothermia?
Yeah, look, hypothermia can almost happen in any water temperature, certainly below 20 degrees, but cold water shock tends to happen when it's below 12. And so the water temperature, for example, in the Murray today is certainly below 12 degrees. There's lots of cold water flows coming out of the mountains, and people often look at a river, they think it's calm, still the surface looks pristine in many cases, but below the surface can be cold water currents that can certainly create...
Yes.
Difficult situations in the water.
Of course, and the deeper you go, the colder it gets, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It can cause cramps. It can cause, which of course, if you get a cramp in deep water, it can significantly impact on your ability to swim to safety. If you spend a lot of time in that cold water, it can create shivering, which leads to hypothermia. And so people have just got to, you know, be a little bit sensible around the water, particularly at this time of the year.
Well, as the title says, know the drowning risk of swimming in cold water. Very important conversation. Justin, thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you and your team. Your family, stay safe, and we'll yarn soon, Justin.
Great, Trevor. Thanks very much. All the best to you and your listeners.
Take care, mate. Bye-bye. A beautiful yarn there. Justin Scar, his name is CEO of Royal Life Saving Society Australia. And look, the topic there was know the drowning risk of swimming in cold water. So we need to be alert in regard to water, precious water, and the fun having. But don't forget jumping in water, especially when looking at low as 15 degrees Celsius, hypothermia can kick in and put yourself in a bad situation. So let's not be lackadaisy in regard to water. Have your say, your mob. Yarn up strong here on your daily program. National Talk Black. The deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yeah, yarning with the bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. We're going across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. We're based at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM. We've got someone online. Very good morning, my brother. How are you?
Good morning, brother. Yeah, brother, the difference between an optimist and a pessimist. One builds his castle in the air, the other one collects the rent, brother.
Yeah, true too. True too, brother. Nice description.
I'm positive and negative and what the first guest spoke about. A lot of people have moral compass. They have God in their lives. And, of course, we think about collectively us, not just ourselves. If you, Jack, we think about the people. Like also Joe McGinnis, everybody has thought about himself and all them old people, but they think a lot about other people as well. And our brother, just from touching on the devil's call, I looked in the Cairns bulletin yesterday to see if my letter was there. It could be in detail, I'll never check. But in it, I said you know, black Americans don't have a monopoly on human rights. And there's a letter in the paper yesterday about somebody had a shot at the two organizers, one is American and the other one from Papua New Guinea. And I was going to say this, you know, yesterday too, and the Queen Beth the Honours list, Sean Dorney got a gong because of his foreign correspondent's work over in New Guinea. Mm. And he's from Australia. He contributed to that country. Kevin Burns, he's from New Guinea, and he contributed. He trucked all the black ones up, what I'm talking about, sorry, taking them back up to the thing. The anthem for another minority group in America, the women's group, was an Australian, Helen Reddy, I Am Woman.
Yes.
And Faith Bandler, she's Pacific Islander, she contributed. All them people in Parliament, brother, that didn't have Australian citizenship. So this it's a lot of you know, crap about all the stuff that asked, you know, like America, the American organizer and the PNG. So there's a lot of people that are in this country. And I couldn't think of I said he was a South African, he's a Belgian bloke, the WA fellow, he's Matthias Cormann. And I'll still be a call on Rio Tinto. If anybody can do a freedom of information, it'd be good to see who else in the party there as shares, brother. Thank you very much, brother.
Yeah, thank you, Selwyn. Too deadly, brother. Having your say here on your daily program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. You Murrays might have to do that tomorrow. I'm going to say Murrays, of course, my non-Indigenous brothers and sisters as well. Open to anybody to have a conversation here on National Talk Black. But so, yeah, you have to do that tomorrow, 1-800-422-416. We're going across the nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. And we're housed here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM. And a big shout out to all our First Nation radio stations across the country, a deadly black network and voices for our people, and our strong conversations are very important, and the tool we use is radio. So yeah, do check it out. But we do have Facebook page. We are up with the internet. We do have a Facebook page, so check that out, BBM 987 FM. And also you can text the brother as well, 0457140550, and that's 24/7 with both those mediums as such. Your Mob Murray going to sign off here. Thank you very much your company. Join us again tomorrow in the hot seat of National Talk Black. Number again, 1-800-422-416. And just checking, I believe we have a caller coming in. Before I say goodbye, let me check who that is. Good morning, how are you?
Yeah, good day, Trevor.
Oh, who's this? Hey, is this Tony? How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate.
Good,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, having a quiet day. There was a show on NITV last night called Grave Injustice.
Grave Injustice.
Yes, it was about mix up in cemeteries and how bad the things are. And there was a Murray baby from buried, and they wondered, but it was lost, and then a white person was buried on top of them.
Here in Australia?
Yeah, mate, it was on NITV last night.
Okay, I missed that story.
Yeah, I watched it, and I thought,
how disrespectful for the dead. What are they trying to save space, are they?
Well, you know, it's like I said, you can't buy a plot, so I'm figuring this whole rat bag thing out what's happening. They're taking money to reserve it, which is nearly $1,000.
But using it, double dipping, so to speak, partner punt.
Yeah, they're double dipping. Oh, yeah, you're dead right, mate. They get your money twice. You reserve it, and then they put it in the bank and get all the interest. This is what's happening.
They'll also take money for somebody else to be buried in the same spot, so to speak.
Yeah, and you see me here in Cairns, I've been talking, I can't even buy outright cash my own
plot. Exactly. And I, for the life of me, cannot still understand why they won't take your money, why you can't book that. Like I said, my father booked his plot for next to my beautiful mother, and there was no dramas. But I don't know why there's a stoppage with you, because you're a white man married to a black woman. I do not know why.
Yeah, that's what makes me not privileged. I'm treated the same.
There you go, good point.
Sherwin goes on, we're both equal. I like to believe in people, and I'm not big religious. I really like to believe in people and think we're in heaven on earth, and after here, I don't know, mate.
Yeah. Got you thinking twice, hasn't it?
Hey?
It's got you thinking twice, hasn't it?
Oh, my head's spinning wild with anger and everything, and I'm not optimistic about a lot. But
yeah, brother, there you go. Optimism is not at the table with you, is it?
Well, some people might not know what optimism is. That's thinking
positive way of looking at things.
Thinking everything's going to be great and rosy and good and everything, you know. Well, the opposite to optimism is pessimism. And we're forced to live in a, you know, I'm sorry.
Pessimistic world,
I can't handle some of these academics, and there's not enough time for the show and the corona thing's finished.
Well, you open the conversation for more people to add, probably for our show tomorrow, but look, I do appreciate you calling all the time, Tony. Thank you.
Thank you. That is something that's happening now, and the Towns Council is supposed to ring me back today about that grave plot, and I'm just being given the runaround. You know, it's rotten.
Well, look, we'll try and get somebody online and let's talk about it. But thank you very much for sharing, Tony. You take care and we'll talk soon, my friend.
Yeah, thank you, Trevor. See you, radio, brother.
Okay, brother. Tony Gibbs there, calling from Gordonvale, and the situation is in regarding got the money here, got the cash there to book the plot next to his lovely lady, Donna, who's with us in spirit, and they wouldn't take his money, can't take that booking, and need to get to the bottom and find out why, and also about the fact that there may be some double dipping going on regarding selling the plot and then selling the plot there again. I don't know, this need to be investigated. Have you say, if you've got any information about that, give us a call, 1-800-422-416. But you may have to do that tomorrow. Otherwise, check our Facebook page, leave a message there as well. Any topic you want to talk about, all is here for your daily program, National Talk Black. Murray, going to sign off. Look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, stay safe. We're not out of the woods regarding COVID-19. So there's no vaccine for the virus. So need to do what you need to do in regarding distancing, social distancing. That didn't happen on the weekend. But Black Power, there it is, stand up for our mob. You too deadly mob, thank you very much for your time.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.